welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast, where we watch a series of movies all in one day and then discuss them afterwards. This is part two of the Avengers Cinemarathon, so if you haven't listened to part one yet, be sure to go back and check that out. But if you're all caught up, then sit back, relax, and enjoy part two of the Avengers.
The next movie in the marathon was Thor.
Yes! Yes.
A lot of Thor love in the room.
I had a Thor mask on, Thor helmet on while we watched Thor, because this was the movie that I was the least excited for when they all started to hit the theaters. Never read a Thor comic. Seems completely fucking ridiculous to me. Movie completely embraces that ridiculousness, takes it like the earnestly, makes a good case for it, and then makes a fairly decent, like, I think it is on par with the first Iron Man, personally, and stands above. Matthew's nodding his head no. Well, that's fine, but right. It has great design, it has great music, it's got really awesome CG, it has a couple of fights that are okay, as good as the other ones.
It has terribly tacked on love interest stories.
It has an awful set of
references
sequences
to
with
Facebook
Natalie Portman.
And...
But it's got
Thor's
all the,
a lot of fun.
All the stuff that's about fun. Thor being Thor is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really benefited with how unapologetically, like, ridiculous it is. Like, just the whole Asgard and
Dude,
Loki.
His cape
and all
is
that.
So fucking cool. Yeah. Like, and they don't ever make a stupid. He doesn't say, like, wink and a nod to the fact that he's wearing this, like, epic space Viking cape. It's like, no, like, they all wear these crazy capes, yeah. And they're all fucking awesome. They look like
just
Lord of the Rings on, like,
unapologetically
speed. Yeah.
Insane. Which I love.
Call it in. All right, we got Jackie Chan, Zena, Robin Hood.
That's my favorite part of the whole movie. Like, that, to me, it's interesting watching it the second time, because the second time I liked it way more. Because
yeah,
the first
here.
Time I saw it, It starts pretty earnest, which is them and all these weirdos, like, going and fighting these ice demons. And it's sort of like a CG marathon of a fight of these giant sort of, like, what's the thing in Star Wars?
They call
the Rancor.
Rancor.
They look like Rancors. And, yeah, they're just fighting. And I remember being totally turned off in the
Same
theater
here.
First time. So I was like, this is just CG bullshit. I'm bored to death. This is terrible. But to me, the movie totally turns when he finally gets to Earth. And all this nuttiness you've been seeing is now juxtaposed with people being just very normal, mm-hmm. and all this, and it's really funny.
Really,
like
funny.
Like Thor, like, smashing glasses and be, I'll have another huzzah, and like just and like bring me a horse and all this, and there, I don't know, that stuff really turned me around to it, and it's genuinely really funny.
Yeah,
the whole movie's hilarious, and in a like cute kind of not dumb way.
Yeah.
In just a genuinely pretty funny way.
Well, and he becomes, regardless of whether or not, obviously, the Asgardians, if that's how you
believe so.
Certainly.
Denominate that, are not immortal, because they can obviously be killed, but they are more, they are stronger than a normal human being.
Oh, absolutely.
And then he...
And I assume live way longer. Like, they seem to be... have a way long lifespan.
Right.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when he's thrown to Earth, he's been given a mortal body. And so his inability to cope with that,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, when he's in the hospital and, like, yeah, he's still a really strong guy. He's throwing people around and like, then he yells out, like, you could never stop Thor. And they just inject him with something. And
right,
it's just him,
out,
like,
yeah.
his face smashing against some glass and he passes out. I mean, and he's like being subdued by Velcro straps and it's pissing him off.
I think it has a lot to do, like, the what you were saying about the first time you saw it, you were really put off, was one, the special effects don't hold up well on the big screen. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the CG just does not lend itself.
Yeah. Plus,
to
I
that.
Was watching it 3D. Which,
oh, yeah.
Obviously,
that's a bad
it's
idea.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And at home, not 3D. It was much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because that's so annoying.
And yeah. The render and everything just holds up so much better on Blu-ray. And actually, I had totally forgotten, is there's a significant amount of practical. In with the ice monster king
and the,
or whatever.
Well,
oh,
the,
yeah.
Oh
Ralphie,
right.
He's a real guy.
Yeah. So that looked really
yeah,
good
he
in
looks
the makeup
all right.
and I don't know. Like, I guess it was such an insignificant part of the movie, because it's one of the first things that happens, like when you first sit down to watch that and you're like, oh my God, this movie's going to be an hour and a half of this bullshit. But once you know you're going to get past it in 10 minutes, then everything else sort of like makes up for it.
Yeah.
So I think that's why the second viewing went so much better.
Also, to me, because now I know his friends, because to me, when you meet him at the top, they mean nothing to you.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly funny later in the movie when you've been in kind of normal town and everyone's normal, and then all of a sudden the Scarlet Pimpernel and the gang like round the corner and are like, huzzah for! And those guys really grew on me. And so I think watching it again, that action scene I was way more invested in, because that guy was, you know, like fencing around and they were just fighting more, and the big beard guy was fighting, and I cared about them a little more.
And dropping the sugar dust on his donut stack or whatever that scene was.
Oh yeah, he had a lot of funny like just side things going on.
And who was there when blah blah blah? You did, Thor. Like all of that shit. So funny.
Well, the Thor character is got a bit of that Tony Stark. Like, he is clearly not a perfect good guy. He's kind of a D-bag, and he's
super arrogant.
And so when they humanize him, literally humanize him, it is automatically funny, and they just handle it really well. And it also creates a villain that, for once in these movies, though there isn't a really great knockdown, drag-out fight, you have Loki, who is believable as a villain, who is
Loki's
given
awesome.
A really great reason to be a villain, and at the same time, like, there's a really great reason for Thor to reach out to him. And, like, finally, there's a movie in one of these movies.
And there's some genuine like hesitation in Loki's actions. Like he realizes the gravity of his situation. He's not just a crazy guy.
Oh yeah.
There's a moment when he's like when he visits Thor when Thor's captured by the agents, and like he's telling him, oh yeah, by the way, our father's dead and you can't ever come back. And he even like as he turns away, you can see that there's a look on his face like, you know, when Thor's like being apologetic and saying, you know, it's the right thing to do for me to not come home, and I understand. And that's like you can see Loki surprised, like that is not who Thor is. And it even becomes a moment of then concern when he realizes that Thor might get his power back.
Right.
If
he's been made a better man.
Yeah.
You know?
A better man than he.
Yeah, the Loki's character in the way they play him in the movie is so complex, because especially for a fucking comic book movie, because like it's. He's like, he was a Frost child, and then, you know, he was taken
badass
by Odin.
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, and he's like, he really plays it well, that you can tell that he actually has a genuine love and affection for his family, but he's so torn mentally, and he's always felt like this outcast, and he makes a great villain, and I think they were really wise to bring him as, like, the Avengers villain, because he's even fucking better in that movie.
Well, and I think that they don't address it properly because it is a Marvel movie, but they start the movie importantly by incorporating him into a sequence of like genocide at the hands of his brother. Like his brother takes him to go murder his own people unbeknownst to him at the time. And then he's forced during the course of the movie to discover that like, oh, you know, mere days ago, I was like snapping necks of my race. And I think that isn't really explored with too much depth because it's a bit heavy even for this movie, which is the most serious of the comic book Marvel movies. Yeah. But that's still pretty fucking serious compared to all the other movies. And when you get to the Avengers, Scarlett Johansson has a line where she's like, yeah, well, he killed 80 people in the last like few days. And if that matters so much to us, then we can assume it matters to him. And he was killing 80 of his own people in this movie. They just never called it out aloud.
His goal is to eliminate the Frost Giants, like to eliminate his own kind. Because
yeah, he uses the gate to just like destroy the whole planet, yeah, right? Basically,
yeah, he does not want anything to do with them, even though he is one of them. And even that, you know, Thor even has that line that you just can't destroy a whole planet. And like, look, he's like, you wanted to kill all of them just like not too long ago. What, you know, and that he changed, and trying to convince Loki that he can change. I really enjoy this movie. I mean, it's not my absolute favorite, but this is the third time that I've watched it, and it gets better with each viewing. Yeah.
That Rainbow Road looks better every time I see it.
Without worrying about plot, you get to see the design, which is really top-notch through all parts.
Well, to me, it's the biggest differential between potential could have been terrible versus actual how it turned out. Like, to me, this had the farthest to potentially fall in terms of how insane and ridiculous it is. It could have been awful. So the fact that it's not only watchable and good, but actually like pretty decent is to me incredibly impressive. impressive.
Yeah, I guess it's an offset. It's got a handicap of just that Thor is such a wacky character.
Space Vikings, the movie.
Yeah, that it's just if it's handled even remotely well, that it just gets mega bonus points for just not being a complete derp fest like you thought it was.
Oh yeah. By the end of the movie, I was shocked. Like I walked out of the theater being like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I enjoyed Thor. Like I thought it was good. I love the stuff with the hammer. It's like the sword and the stone thing where like all these like rednecks are driving their trucks out and trying to get the hammer. That's such a smart sequence.
And you know, I was watching and they really had that like hammer, that practical hammer and stone. They really had it in there. Like it wasn't like they were trying like a fake thing, like where, you know, you can see them trying to pull on it and it's actually rocking around because it's obviously a prop.
Oh, that would have been terrible.
That thing was anchored when they were pulling on it. And like, you can see that they're doing stuff to it. It's not moving and it looks so good. And like when I love the scene where Thor is going and it's pouring rain and he's at the hammer and Coulson is like watching him from on high and just being
and Hawkeye.
Hawkeye's got his arrow on him. We introduced Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye in that scene.
That was another one that when that happened in the theater, because I'm not up on the comics or anything, and I like Jeremy Renner busted a bow and arrow, and I was like, well, like, who's this guy? Like, what is the point of this? But then someone had to tell me, like, that's Hawkeye, and I was like, oh, okay. But I just didn't know.
Jeremy Renner, who I call Sam Worthington's understudy, just the most
He's better than Sam Worthington. He's so much gayer
and more charming than Sam Worthington.
You know, he is a better actor than Worthington, but he does have that sort of like no face, uninteresting.
You know when he totally won me over? Because I would have said the same thing, but when I saw Mission Impossible 4,
he's okay.
After that, I really liked him.
He's okay. Like if you had replaced him with literally any other actor.
No. I thought he did very well in that movie, especially the stuff where he's in the metallic suit and he's in the, you know, pipes. And he had a rapport that was very funny and charming that I was not prepared for him to do that. Frankly, Sam Worthington, I don't think could ever pull off.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's quite, but I see what you're saying.
He is better. He just has a sort of a blandness to me. So like him as Hawkeye is not like, it doesn't spark anything in me.
I gotcha.
Well, I feel we should talk about the forced love story. Because
the whole Natalie Portman thing.
That's the major flaw of the movie where they literally know each other for 1 day.
What are you talking about, man? It's true love, man.
He's there for 1 day.
Love.
That's just for the girlfriends, dude. Because half this movie plays like a romance novel. Like, you can just see Natalie Portman's like doe eyes looking at this like hot Viking dude. And it just, to me, I felt like it brought the ladies into the movie a little bit. I mean, it was incredibly heavy-handed and dumb, but...
Could you imagine if they cast somebody that wasn't Natalie Portman who you thought could really use, like, a handsome stranger in their life? Like, that's part of the fault of the movie, I think, is that Natalie Portman is such a individual outside of this movie that, like, there's just no... You see her and you think, oh, that's Natalie Portman. She's clearly got her shit together. Like, why would she fall in love with this fucking dopey, giant, like, medieval-speaking guy? But if they had cast somebody who needed it a little more, who looked a little more eager, I think it wouldn't have been so outrageous. But Natalie Portman's fucking terrible.
She's bad in this. She actually is outwardly
bad.
She
looks pretty.
Yeah, well.
I'll tell you that. I'd go really easy on her because I have to confess I sort of have like a huge crush on her.
Well, like you and every other person on the planet.
So to me it was sort of like, oh yay, Natalie Portman's there too. Like it just didn't bother me that
much. Honestly, just give it to Kat Dennings.
Yeah, Kat Dennings.
Like she could have been that character.
She's pretty funny in the movie too.
Yeah, like she plays it well, and like her, I would have believed like Alexei saying her falling for this. You know what I mean? Like she's like, I don't know. Kat Dennings would have been a better choice.
There's a funny bit where they commandeer all of their stuff and Natalie Portman's really sad that like decades worth of research is gone. And she's like, my iPod's gone. It had like 10 songs in it and stuff. And she's like really bummed out about it. That always, I always got a laugh out of me.
I thought you were a science major, political science.
And then what's his name?
Stellan Skarsgård.
Stellan Skarsgård's in it as well. He's good too.
He's an important character.
Yeah, he comes into the next or into Avengers.
And we have reason to believe he's probably not going anywhere. You know, like he's part of that franchise.
Yeah, but I like I mean it's sort of heavy handed, but I like the idea that they get this sort of Nordic, you know, Scandinavian actor to be the guy that's like, I remember these tales from my childhood stories. And so, I don't know, because I'm a huge fan of Scandinavian cinema and Lars von Trier and that kind of stuff. So I had this weird end to me where I'm like, yeah, Skarsgård and Thor, like.
Well, and Thor's hammer looks like Thor's hammer, so at some point you have to cut that off. That somebody's going to be like, "Wait a fucking minute! Like, this is Thor. Like, we know this because this is a pop culture reference already."
And I think we should at least give props to, like, even though the final battle type thing is a little underwhelming with the Devastator, because it's like, there's no, I don't know about you, but I don't give a shit about the small town being destroyed. So yeah. It's like, whatever. But the Devastator itself is awesome.
Yeah, and that scene where it, like, twists itself around backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, it's really cool.
That was really awesome. I thought it looked really good.
Kind of reminded me of, like, the T-1000. There's that bit where it sort of 180s itself, like, its whole body.
Is that one of Stark's machines? He never tells me anything.
Yeah. Agent Coulson is, he's really funny in that bit. Like, he's just sort of, he's no look just talking to it, like, not phased at all that this metal monster's coming at him.
Yeah, Coulson's a funny character. We didn't really talk about it in 2, but just, I like that part where he's like, I'm going to sit here and make sure that you work through whatever's wrong with you until you're okay. And, like, Stark's like, well, then what if I say I don't want to? And he's like, then I'm going to tase you and watch Super Nanny and tell you. I like that Coulson was just, like, this funny through line.
Yeah.
He's good.
But then, the ending fight with Loki on the Rainbow Bridge, where, like, he has to destroy his only connection.
And it's really emotional, because they used to be brothers and stuff. It's really working for me.
It's the good son.
Yeah. Oh, like, you know, it was, like, the good son, but Loki chose to let go.
Yeah, yeah.
He chose to fall into that black abyss. Whether or not he knew he would be okay or not is questionable, because we know that he knows.
It seemed like he did it sort of out of penance. Like, he was this, like, sort of knowing that, like, oh, like, what I've done is, like, awful. But then he comes back and then it's like, doesn't seem too guilty about it.
Changed his mind. We should also talk about Stringer Bell a little bit.
How fucking awesome he is.
Idris Elba.
Yeah. What's the name of that character? I forgot.
Heimdall?
That armor and the contacts they have in his eyes and his massive fucking sword and stuff. Like, that, he just looks so cool.
I hope he's a big part of the second movie.
He and Volstagg and the other the Sif and the other two are always around in there and doing stuff for Thor. They're always around.
Part of what I really appreciate about Thor in comparison to a lot of these other movies is that if you're going to take, like, another fucking movie, set it someplace I've never seen before and, like, do a good job. And how about, I don't know, a rainbow bridge on the edge of space-time, like, with giant gold fortresses and floating castles and dudes in full body armor and, like, it was all really cool, and there was something to look at in any boring moment of that movie, which is part of why I think it's good on the second watch, because now that you know the plot, you can actually look around the movie, and it's all really fucking cool looking, like every inch of it.
The design is awesome, and the sets are really cool, too.
Well, you know what I've never seen that I didn't see until that movie was a perfectly clean, brand new town out in the middle of the desert. It's like
an obvious set. Yeah,
it's like this town just got built, and there's, like, nothing around it. Was very bizarre.
That is, I guess, one of the minor drawbacks. It does feel like, rather than the Devastator hitting downtown New York and thing everywhere, it just feels like a movie set
budget
town.
Conscious devastation.
Yeah. You feel like they're shooting old West movies, like a block over. Like.
Though I feel that there's an incredible missed opportunity for, like, this is just, like, a personal preference, but I would have loved to have seen Vincent D'Onofrio in, like, working at, like, the garage in the small town, like a nod back to, like, Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, I've never seen that movie, so I don't know.
I've never seen it.
Have you ever seen Adventures in Babysitting?
No.
There's a Thor reference in that.
Yeah, there's
pretty heavy, yeah.
Oh, dude, she's, like, wearing a helmet, right?
Yeah. And then, like,
but there's an incredible classic Vincent D'Onofrio Thor reference. And I don't know, I was, every time I watch him, that would have been so great if he just had a small part in it.
It's too busy solving murders or whatever on Criminal Intent. It's not even murders, right? Yeah. It's like...
And it's canceled, so...
Yeah, who gives a fuck? Do you guys have anything else about Thor?
It was awesome. It was awesome. Thor.
Just, it wins the award for production design.
Absolutely.
And for all of these movies. Like, I mean, Iron Man's very, like, good and stable and clean and does exactly what it needs, but... This, like, Thor's production design is exciting. Like, it's what you want to see in a comic
book. I'll give it biggest surprise. Mm-hmm. Like, the one that I was the least pumped for happens to be the one that I seem to like a lot.
Best horns on a helmet?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
That whole thorn. Games, right? the whole throne room was amazing.
Yeah.
All the practical sets. I think we got to just at least, I don't know if we even mentioned his name, but I think you got to give some credit to Kenneth Branagh.
For
taking what could have been something really silly and understanding his background in Shakespearean work and how he had a very self-awareness of like what he was dealing with and how he brought that knowledge to the table. And I think he really was a major factor in that.
And then still making earnest, funny sequences that aren't all about the costumes and, yeah. and yeah. Anthony Hopkins and whatever. And like just honest, decent, fun movie.
I mean, it's no Wild Wild West, but
nothing is a Wild West.
Or Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
I kind of like that movie.
Yeah, you need to see it again, bro.
Yeah, Brad.
It does not hold up.
Also, I just want to mention Stanley's cameo again. Because I just want to bring these up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's always
absolutely.
Fun to see him yeah, in every one of the movies that he's in.
He's like the guy driving the truck trying to pull the hammer out. Right?
Like, yeah, and they just completely like rip the back end
and
off the
like,
truck.
And he's like, did it work? Excellent. Well, the next movie in the marathon was Captain America, the First Avenger.
Look so close.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're just glad we're closer to actual Avengers.
I know. Just like when it was coming out, it was now they're actually saying like Avengers in the title.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but doesn't that shit seem mercenary to you? Like, hey, let's just call it the Avengers Part 0.5.
Avengers
I'm a
Zero.
Nerd and I've been waiting for it all my life. You can tease me as much as you want. I'll only get more excited.
But you don't. It's still the movie. Like if it was called Captain America, it's still Captain America. It's still the same movie and all that. It just seems like at that point, it's like the cutthroatiness of it all is starting to show a little more. And it's like,
but it only builds to something good. So it's not
well, that's the thing. At the time, you don't know if it's going to be good or not. All you know is like they're going to shoehorn 80 guys into this movie.
It is. Clearly, purely a marketing choice. Yeah. Like, that is it. Like,
and I would only disagree in one sense in that there have been other Captain America movies. This might be help something like when people are going, oh, well, on IMDb and look up Captain America, and like there's 10 of them. It'd be like just something to draw your attention to something else.
But overall, I have to say, of all of the Avengers movies that were made, this is actually the one I was like the most excited for. Because I actually read some Captain America. I knew about it. I knew Red Skull. It's got Nazis. Like they were setting it in World War II. So I was really pumped going in. And unlike Thor, where I had low expectations and was really happy, this movie was like I came in big and just it falls short of what I had hoped it would be. And I don't know what's not working in it, but it's not working.
I would theorize that it's going to be a little bit of the Inglourious Bastards kind of fall short, where it's like, okay, everything was there, but I really wanted to see more. Like that montage where it's like him just like destroying like Titanic
Nazis.
Taints.
Taints.
You just want to see more.
Yeah.
Like, they gloss over the good stuff.
Yeah, like what you would want to see Captain America doing, which is being a captain, like you never get. It's in a 3-minute montage, and then you don't really get it ever again. Well, the second half of the movie like just throws away all of its opportunities.
And I feel that that's partially in responsible with the Tesseract, you know, having the whole movie centers around that the cube.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to have the next movie make more sense, they felt like, okay, well, we can't spend too much time with Captain America and his adventures. We need to get to the whole plot with the cube, and that needs to be the driving force of this movie.
I didn't think that was too much of the issue. I mean, every movie needs some MacGuffin that's like, oh, this is the thing we're fighting over.
The arc.
Yeah, it didn't really... Yeah, exactly. It feels like the Ark of the Covenant or something. It's like,
right,
it doesn't...
But the whole movie is about the Ark of the Covenant, and Indiana Jones doesn't have like 50 other adventures in the process. Like,
yeah.
The movie wouldn't have made sense if... It was like, okay, I'm going to go after the Ark, but first...
Let me do a montage of me doing, like, whipping stuff.
And, like, a good MacGuffin is you're chasing it the entire time. You're not necessarily talking about it the entire time.
Right.
They don't even know it exists.
Yeah, to me, the strengths of this movie are sort of the beginning and the end. And I remember being in the theater. There was a point maybe 30, 45 minutes in the movie where I was like, this movie's going to be fucking rad.
Yeah.
Because it's all the stuff with Steve Rogers as, like, a young... tiny guy, his whole arc of becoming Captain America really got me into it. I love the scene where he like jumps on the grenade and they're talking about you need heart and you really like that guy. And it's everything leading up to him becoming Captain America is cool. I think when he first gets out of the machine and there's like Nazi spies and old grannies with machine guns and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the whole car chase, it's not the best thing in the world, but I was like into it. And then it's like for no reason he's now in like musicals and running around.
Yeah, they immediately make the most exciting part about the movie not cool.
Yeah, they just stop. And
I get why they did that story-wise, but they should have made it shorter.
No, it's a significant chunk of the movie.
So long. Yeah, I laughed when they first it was Captain America and the comics and stuff, but then the song just kept going, and I was
musical.
Really?
It's a musical interlude.
It is an entire musical act. Like, it's so long. But I
think that feeds into the era that the movie took place in. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's feeding into the whole idea of propaganda, and it makes sense. But I think what we're saying is it just didn't need to be there as long as it was.
Well, it gets us so far away from Red Skull and everything he's doing,
which is the number one thing wrong with this movie is you cast Hugo Weaving as Red Skull, which is genius. It's anybody that could pull off Red Skull, it's Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, it was perfect
casting.
And
you don't use him. Red Skull does nothing this entire movie.
He gets angry.
Yeah.
Barely gets angry.
I'm really confused, even in retrospect of having watched this 1 week ago. What is his plan? And I still
He's making weapons with the Tesseract.
He's going to bomb the huge cities in North America.
He needs a Tesseract because he needs a power source that can power technology that was prior to that undesignable.
And
impossible
he's got really big hangers and
really,
an army.
Really long,
yeah, like really massive.
And an army of shit. And it just the movie, for what it was so completely unexciting past the point of all right, the build up. Oh my God, he's Captain America. And then an hour goes by and you're like, oh wait, what's Red Skull up to? Let's just stop him.
Well, they kind of just say oh, there's a bunch of Hydra bases around. Here they are on a map. Let's take them out. And then we proceed to, that's when the montage comes.
Yeah,
where it's
just beating people up.
He's taking out Hydra. But you don't really get a sense that it's happening or what's going on.
Well, I did like that Red Skull is the head of this agency that Hitler has sanctioned, and they're pretty much giving him unlimited funds to come up with things. It's very reminiscent of the Thule Society.
Oh yeah, pretty much splinters from them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's you're thinking in the sense of Hitler's trying to do anything possible. So here's a guy who's promising all this stuff, but really he's screwing Hitler over for his own gain.
Yeah.
So I think that was all interesting, and I loved all the visual design of everything that Red Skull had. All their facilities, all the gauges that had this crazy glow to them, and his self-destruct switches with all the flipping numbers. I love that kind of stuff.
They nailed his look, too.
It looked perfect.
He looks just Red fucking Skull.
It's all super cool. I just didn't understand why he didn't, his only plan is, I need this cube that luckily he finds at the beginning. He has nothing else that could defeat, one dude who's got big muscles.
And you want to talk about an anticlimactic,
Pushes him over.
Captain America makes it to the hangar, is there with Red Skull. Red Skull, I don't even remember what happens. They might shoot each other a couple times. He picks up the Tesseract and then just vanishes. Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah, it was kind of I was very confused. It almost reminded me of the ending of the first Transformers movie, where I wasn't sure exactly what happened when Sam Witwicky threw the cube up in the air and then freaking Megatron died. I was like, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
And then I felt the same way about the Tesseract until I knew more about it and know that Red Skull potentially could still be alive. That it wasn't that
right.
He'll be coming back.
It's not that any of those people who got shot with the weapon could not, maybe potentially not be dead.
Oh, they're dead. Those people are dead.
Yeah, because they get vaporized.
But there's a clear difference. So they get vaporized and they're dead. But when he disappears, it's Rainbow Bridge effects and it's Rainbow Bridge sound.
Right.
But I think also what did a disservice to this movie for me was that Hellboy is about Nazis using the occult to take over the world, and it's so much more interesting than his plan, which is I got a gun. okay. The entire world's covered in guns at this point. You got a gun? You're going to vaporize some dudes, and then vanish?
Well, also, I assume that this Tesseract powers the, Uber bomber that they're flying.
Because that's why he can't continue to fly.
So his plan is to, blow up a bunch of U.S. major cities. Although they really sort of just kind of brush over that without a lot of explanation.
Yeah, but his plan is, to win the war.
It looked like there was, Hydra suicide bombers, because they were flying around, a bomb plane or something.
I guess it's weird to me, because, obviously that's already Hitler's plan.
Yeah.
Right? to win World War II, that's your secret plan.
Well, I think one of them was going to Berlin.
Yeah, he was just going to use the Tesseract to take over everything.
Blowing everything up.
So he was a bigger, whatever. Well, okay, you guys don't really like some of the stuff in the movie, but there is some good stuff.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
One thing, returning character, Howard Stark, is really good in this.
Yes.
Yeah, Dominic Cooper.
And that was a cool idea to throw a Stark in there. And
Vibranium, or what's the shit?
That was a Shelia.
Also, let's not forget the silver lining of a little character I like to call Dum Dum Dugan.
Yeah.
Which is so... I can't even... It's just a bowler hat and this ridiculous like mustache and
his
just,
Irish turtleneck or whatever.
I don't know why or how. Every scene that guy was in, I just loved it because it was so dumb. He looks so goofy looking that it.
Yeah, that whole crew of like you know, like rascals was like pretty amazing. I love the Asian guy.
Yeah, all the characters in this movie are all.
I'm from Fresno, Ace. Like,
yeah, so condescending. Yeah. And I love that with Dugan and those bowler hat, once they're like officially ranked, like he puts his like his military rank on
it's
the
like
bowler
an insignia
hat.
On that bowler.
He's just running around shotgunning around. Like,
well, that's one of the goofy things from the comics that they put in. And I know you're not saying anything bad about it, but I'm just saying I love that they put it in.
Oh, yeah. It's God so bless great. Them. Yeah.
And they even got like their his goofy ass chant, like the because it used to be. Those characters are all from Nick Fury and his Howling Commandos.
Yeah, you were telling me they sort of like retrofitted them to be Captain America's guys, but
yeah, they
aren't
used to
in
be
the
Nick
comic.
Fury's guys, okay. But they made him Captain America's guys because Nick Fury, I guess, isn't like the guy who's alive forever in the comics, like because you know Sam Jackson is probably either like not born yet.
Oh, so in the comics, Nick Fury is like an immortal or something?
Yeah, basically.
Oh.
He's been alive the whole time Cap's been frozen.
Oh, like, wow. I never knew that.
He
oh,
took
okay.
this thing, some serum that like makes it so he doesn't age.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Okay.
It's like comic book crazy.
Yes, absolutely. No, that's good to know. It's interesting. But yeah, he's funny in the movie, and ultimately it can't
There's
save
a, lot of great
a movie that makes no sense.
Yeah,
like,
and the design's all super cool. Like, I think the era-appropriate stuff is all really cool. Tony Stark's flying car that gets like 2 seconds of airtime is cool. The whole apparatus that turns him into Captain America is cool. Who plays the scientist?
Stanley Tucci.
Stanley Tucci is great.
Stanley Tucci is great.
There's
the
a lot
love
of great stuff
is
in this
really,
movie.
Really pretty.
Oh, Peggy.
But she is pretty.
Yeah, but it's also not like a love story that felt as forced as like Thor.
Oh, no, it's good like, because they don't ever actually... Yeah, sorry.
It goes over time is what I'm saying. Like, it's not one day I met you, now I'm in love with you. It's she sees the good
in
him.
Did you see Chris Hemsworth's abs? Did you see them?
Did I?
It's also really touching at the end when, you know, he's like setting a date with her and stuff and you know he's going to get frozen and all that. I really like the end of the movie a lot. Like, when he gets frozen, he comes out and he's in New York and he's sort of like, shit, I missed that date. Like, that's pretty moving.
It's interesting. I feel like we've, other than Thor, which we obviously have a huge appeal for now, especially having seen it multiple times, is that the main criticism we have of the other movies is that the third acts just don't have weight. Like, none of them know how to, like, end it.
Well, that's because they weren't good movies leading up to the third act, and you can't tie it up if there's nothing to tie up.
But this movie has elements of quality. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's just not directed as in like the director's bad, but just it's not focused properly into a coherent story.
Well, he got brought in at the last second too, right?
Did he?
He was supposed to direct it just prior to Johnston coming on.
Yeah, and then I cannot stress enough how much of a total fail it is to have he's in various Captain America outfits throughout the movie, but the first time he's in like the legit canon, like here it is, Captain America suit, it's the first shot of that montage, and that is such a bummer. Like, mess
you don't get
up
to see him suiting up or something.
Yeah, it's like I know it's cliche and I know it's been done a thousand times, but like, come on, like let him zip up, do it, and then go into like a scene and give me that moment.
Yeah,
actually, that would have been a really funny moment if they had been like, well, here's your wardrobe, and have like the dun 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 dun, like him putting on all this stuff, and then just smash cut to song and dance, and he's just like, it's like so anticlimactic.
Yeah,
that would have
been funny.
It would have been kind of funny if they did that. Yeah.
Yeah, I almost feel like you give it to him in the scene where he goes and rescues everybody. Like, fuck it, just give it to him then. Like, and then that way, here's this big scene, and it's him versus Red Skull and all that. Not during the him and the boys just kind of run around in montage. Oh, and fucking the Bucky falling to his death
really
so awkwardly. Like, what? Like, I know I'm not a huge comic book fan. Like, and it pays off in no way. I mean, I guess they're setting up future movies or something. But it's so
clear whether or not they intend to bring him back.
Like everyone I know who's a fan of the comics knows that I guess Bucky comes back as, like, a villain or something.
The Winter Soldier, is that what his name is?
Yeah, I
don't think they're going to do that.
But here's the thing. If you don't know that, and you're just going to that movie with no information, that happens, and he just flies off to his death, and the next scene they're like, well, that was kind of sad. Anyway, like, what was that's the worst storytelling. Like,
is there going to be a Captain America 2?
Yes.
Okay.
They're doing Thor 2, Captain America 2, Avengers 2, and Iron Man 3.
Yeah. And probably another Hulk trilogy.
Oh, man.
Try again.
Don't forget the adventures of Hawkeye and Black Widow.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just, for me, it's handled very awkwardly.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, it's like, why even do that? Like, why not just have Bucky just still be around? And then Captain America can go to the future and you can bring him back in any way you want without him, like, just falling off a train.
Yeah, we don't need to know what happens to him between, like, because it's like, it's literally like the next day that they assault and he died and Captain America's frozen.
Yeah.
So literally anything could have happened to Bucky in that amount of time without Captain America knowing. And then when he resurfaces, it's like, oh, wow, you know. But I think part of the problem, and I don't know how if they're doing this with Captain America 2, is that, Captain America obviously ends with him in modern times. There was a lot of missed opportunities that they could have had to have other Captain America adventures in that era. And that upset me. I would have liked to have seen a Captain America 2 set in that time.
The next Captain America movie is going to be a modern day one. And I'm in the same boat as you, as I would have loved to have seen more stuff. But they could always do, like,
flash it back.
The Adventures of Captain America.
We didn't see all of what happened in those montages, you know? Yeah. Yeah,
they're not going to do that. Let's call it. They're keeping him firmly in modern times.
I would bet you that if they do within two
straight to DVD animation,
within two sequels, if they do two Captain America sequels, at least one of them is going to have a thing where they go, oh yeah, I remember I saw something, and then they'll flash back to scene action, some sort of action scene within that montage. Addressing something that then comes back.
Yeah. A flashback. That's hardly a whole other movie. I mean, he's going to be in these two sequels to this, and then he's going to be in two Avengers sequels, and then, God forbid, they start putting him crossing into Iron Man, which would make a lot of sense, or any of the other movies at this point. They could show up, and probably will show up can market it.
I want that so bad. I want, like, all the superhero movies coming up now, I want them to have, like, the Black Widow appearance, but not from Black Widow, just from any of them.
Well, but they're gonna, because now they can cut trailers to the next movie and show they're gonna have every character in every movie, because that just helps them sell it, and that's,
I don't know, I don't know about all of them, but probably
one or two.
Yeah, one or two, because you have to.
Because you don't want
to
do the Avengers again, I mean.
Now that we've all seen them together, there's never gonna be a situation like, oh no, we don't think Captain America can handle this. Because, like, well, okay, if he can't handle it, he can call seven other people to help him. There aren't very many scenarios where you're going to be worried that Captain America can't handle it by himself. It's like, well, obviously he can't handle it by himself, so he should call the Avengers.
Well, I guess every script from here on out is going to have to be, like, they're going to be like, well, I would call Thor, but he's dealing with this thing in Asgard. Right. You know, like, you're going to have to write that into every script.
Yeah, what do they do in the comics? Like, how do they address that kind of thing?
It's usually just kind of somebody happens to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, that's usually, or the person is like, they're dealing with the other person's villain. So, like, Spider-Man, like, Iron Man's fighting Doc Ock, and so Spider-Man will drop by.
Do they get their Rolodex and, like, go through one by one?
They don't feel the need to cameo like crazy in comic books, because they're also selling the other comics. You know, like, Avengers obviously is set up on them being a team, but when you read any of the individual comics for the ones that can support their own book, they don't need to cameo, because they're not catering to the general public in the same way that Marvel is doing in the movies. Yeah.
They do a lot of crossovers.
Well, yeah, but they do big crossovers so that they could sell extra comics. I mean, they'll put Batman in 80 other fucking books because they know that Batman completists will have to go buy all those books. But I'm saying, like, they don't need to drop Spider-Man into Thor every issue, because if not, no one's going to buy Thor. Like, nobody's going to buy Thor if they don't want to buy it.
Right.
Nobody's going to buy it just because it's got, like, oh, yet another fucking one page of cameo. But they'll do that in the movies. Like, they will put Iron Man in a movie for 2 minutes, as they've shown already.
Mm-hmm. Well, because otherwise the movies are just going to have really low stakes. Oh, this guy's going guy's going to rob a bank. Oh, no. Okay. Captain America can handle
that. I can't wait. Did we have anything else about Captain America before we move on? That's it. Sorry, Cap.
Oh, well, sorry.
No. What's
backtracking
up?
Again. Stan Lee, last minute. Stan Lee came.
Oh, yes. Of course. He's like a general, right?
Yeah. When Captain America's about to receive kind of honor in the field, they call him out, and then a different guy comes out because Captain America's off on a mission, and Stan Lee's like a general, goes, I thought he'd be taller.
All right. Well, moving on, we go to the final film at long last. We reach The Avengers.
Man. Before any nitpicking starts, because I'm going to do some nitpicking, I think we can all agree that this is a huge success of a movie.
Yes,
and
great
like
movie. Absolutely.
Pulled off putting all these characters together in a way that I certainly thought was impossible.
Yeah.
Avengers, an exceptional popcorn flick.
Yeah, it kicks ass. Like Alexei, like you said, I mean, to me, it had the deck stacked against it of all these years of hype and all these people coming together. And I'm sitting here like,
last minute character, actor replacements.
Yeah, and people are changing. It's like, no way is this going to live up to my expectations. And then when I saw it, I just was amazed that it was really awesome and really fun to watch and totally lived up to the hype. I couldn't believe it, like, after all those years. Just incredible. And I don't know if that's a credit to the actors. I don't know if that's a credit to Joss Whedon. You have to imagine, like, that's what's different, is that he's helming this movie and he kills it. It's so good.
It's as if, like, finally Disney let someone helm one of these movies that was actually the best decision, as opposed to just a decision they could make. Like, Kenneth Branagh was a good choice for Thor, and, like, on paper it made sense, and then in practice it also made sense. And it seemed like Joe Johnson was a good choice on paper for Captain America. I don't know what happened. But, like, for somebody to do an ensemble cast where they each get a minimal amount of lines to toss at each other and each one has to count, like, the dialogue was just on point the entire movie.
Yeah, I remember when they said that Joss Whedon was going to do it, and people were like, a little like, that could be cool, but also, I'm kind of nervous because he's so plagued by, like success in the worst way.
Yeah.
Or, like, his stuff is, like, successful with a certain set, but then it's also always just canceled or something.
Well, because it's so specific. Like, I mean, I'll be the first person to say, for the past 2.5 years, I was at the top of the list of skepticism as to whether or not I would like an Avengers movie with Joss Whedon at the helm. Because, one, I'm not a Buffy fan. I was won over by Firefly eventually, but he is very specific. Like, he doesn't write just movies. He writes Whedon movies, and he writes Whedon TV shows, and to take something that specific, a style and a tone, and apply it to something as big and as universal as the Avengers was a reasonable reason to be concerned.
Yeah.
Like, but I'm not saying he didn't pull it off. I'm saying he did a fantastic job with it, but I can understand why people were upset by it.
I was not completely sold, and I was like, well, we'll see how it goes. But I did maintain, though, that the one thing that he had going for him was that he always is able to manage a group of characters really well, and that paid off so well.
Oh my God.
And a movie is a team effort in that he gets to direct these sequences of actors standing around quipping, but he has a team of very talented people to put together these giant set pieces and all the CG and all the art direction and all of these other things where maybe he wasn't the best qualified to do a $280 million movie or whatever. It seems like for all those millions of dollars, they hired some people that could help.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, had good backing on this one.
Well, Joss Whedon, to me, has always been really successful at characters and character development. And a challenge, especially for this movie, would be that these characters, one, have already been established. And they weren't characters that he created. They weren't characters that he can really tweak their personalities, because their personalities are established. To be able to do what he did with his character development and his dialogue and his style to characters that other big people like Branagh and Favreau and even Joe Johnston, these other people have done, I think it was incredible. Really do.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm first to eat my words and say that my concern over Whedon was completely wrong.
I mean, Richard, what you mentioned about him and characters, that to me is what is the standout thing about the Avengers. Because if you look at all, save perhaps Iron Man and in some parts Thor, in terms of their character development, to me, this absolute saving grace and the reason the Avengers is amazing. I love the set pieces. I love the action. They're all incredibly entertaining. But the core of what that makes that movie work is you can tell he sat down he's got all these people in this movie, and he went one by one with each character and was like, how can I have an arc for this character in this movie to make people invested in them? And literally every character has something.
I would agree with you, with the exception of Thor. I don't think Thor has any kind of arc.
No, I think he does. I think he's fighting his brother, which I think makes it very emotional and intense.
But Thor's superhuman. You know, he's not just a costumed superhero. He's also literally an alien from another planet who is above humans. Like, on a biological level, he is stooping to even partake.
No, I know. What I'm saying is I like what he did with Thor in this movie. I know Josh and I had spoken before about how Thor, in theory, like on page, again, in comic book universe, is the least interesting of the characters. He's easily the weakest link of the Avengers. So it's going to be hard to give him an interesting arc. But to me, at the beginning of the Avengers, Thor is in contest with his brother. At the end of the movie, he's in contest with his brother. Well,
excuse me. Maybe arc isn't the exact correct term. I think more what I mean is an emotional investment in the film. And yes, I agree that Thor's arc already happened in Thor.
Exactly.
Like, he grew into the man he was, and it would be silly to have it go to the nth power and do it again.
No, in that sense, none of the characters really have an arc too much.
No, I think they do. Certainly Iron Man does, absolutely, because the whole movie is about Iron Man is a like narcissistic, self-loving guy, and actually him and Captain America are constantly butting heads about that, because Captain America's Mr. Squeaky Clean. And by the end of the movie, Iron Man is selflessly risking his life and flying into this thing. I thought it was a really clever thing
to
do.
But he had done that before. He's been risking his
life. Well, but not on this level. It's like, for all intents and purposes, it was like a suicide mission. Like,
and
I know
it
he
was less for the glory as it was for the love of these other people.
Yeah. Like, by the end of this movie, he's not like, he's still an egomaniac. He's still the same character he was. I'm not saying that he's like a completely different person, but that was huge for me to have this kind of, he had to make this decision of like, like Captain America keeps saying, you know, you're just so selfish, and are you going to be the guy to, you know, jump on the grenade and take the bullet? Would you do that for your, you know, brethren or whatever? And like, I really like that he does that. And
so
you do not
think that Iron Man in 1 or 2, Tony Stark and that character would have done that. He would have fled a whole city
I'm not saying that. I love, you know, Iron Man. I think he's a great character. I'm just saying for this movie, he very intentionally set up this scenario,
which was why Agent Coulson died. Really? I mean as far as like, I think it was an intelligent way to grab the audience and raise the stakes, and a character that everybody really enjoyed. So it was a tool, but I think it was very specifically a tool for Tony Stark's change. At least a mental.
Well, it made it real. Yeah. He's like, oh shit, it's on. Like, this guy's dead. And that, frankly, that's the most Whedon the movie gets. That is like classic Joss Whedon. Is like, hey, this guy you really love, like, I'll give him one final quip, and then I'll rip his guts out right in front of you. And it works every time on me. And I cannot believe I didn't see it coming. And as soon as it happened, I was like, of course Joss Whedon's going to do this to me. Take this awesome character and just fucking murder him.
Yeah.
But he does it every time, and every time it really adds so much weight to the movie.
We built this gun after you sent that thing to Attack City. I don't even know what it does.
Yeah. And he does it. He always gives him a good line, and then done. Like, every time.
Yeah.
But it works really well. And I also think Captain America has a really good story. And I like the whole fish out of water thing that he does with him.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of the movie, he's a little more comfortable with like where he is.
I knew that reference.
Yeah, that line is so good. I got that reference.
Oh, right, because they're joking about Wizard of Oz. Yeah, and he's like, oh, I got that.
And then just his blank stare afterwards. Like, I don't know. It's just.
Yeah. And we already talked about it a bit, but like, Jesus Christ, the Hulk in this movie is so good.
It's the best.
He has the two best parts in the movie.
Absolutely.
Opinion,
yeah,
undeniably.
The Hulk, when he punches Thor,
yep.
After
yep.
They have that fight, and he's just like, I'm still kind of mad about this. Like, that just set me off. And then when he just grabs Loki mid speech and just wails on him,
bam, bam.
That was, man, not just a highlight of this movie in particular. I've seen a lot of movies lately, and I have not laughed so loud or been so just blown away by a moment in a movie. I saw someone online, they were debating with a friend in like a Facebook chat, and someone had a really good take on that moment. And they said, they were sort of joking, but they were like, this must be how people in the theaters felt when Indiana Jones like shot the swordsman.
Oh yeah.
In Lost Ark. It really was like that kind of a moment where it was just like, you're just blown away with like, it's really funny and just really out of nowhere.
Well, because it goes against all expectations.
You think he's going to start monologuing.
Yeah. It's and like, Loki okay, really sells it. Yeah. Him just being like, I am a god and you can't, and then just boom, 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 like just beat to shit. And he's puny done guy. After that point. Like he's pretty much
just,
done.
The look on his face, he's like literally pounded into the floor. Just like,
my friend who I saw it with said that they might as well have animated the birds flying in a circle over his head. Was just like, he was embedded in like the concrete. Yeah.
And I cannot give enough credit to Mark Ruffalo for his portrayal of Bruce Banner in this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's literally you watch it and you're like, yeah, why didn't no one else ever do it like this? Because this is, now that I've seen that, it's like, this is clearly the way to play Bruce Banner. I feel like a no-brainer.
His
like,
secret is that he's always angry.
That's a little weird. I kind of hope they don't make another Hulk movie. I want to keep it, I don't, because if they open it back up and do a whole storyline, it's going to be like, about feelings again, I feel like. And that's just going to ruin it. But really, but he's already, really good.
They said, like, he's got it, he's got the feelings down. And, like, we've seen so much of his backstory. I think that they could do a movie with Hulk with just enough Iron Man or just enough of somebody else bouncing in it to have it be about how smart he is. And, like, finally, he's not – in this movie, it wasn't like, oh, he's pretty smart, but he's just obsessed with, like, what makes him the Hulk and Hulk, 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 Hulk. Like, it was – okay, he's done talking about the Hulk. Like, he's got this shit down. He's come to grips with it. How can I help in these other things? I'm glad that you people are actually inviting me along. I kind of think you're all retarded for it. But he was just a more complete person, like, the second he stepped on screen. It was just so amazing to me, like, how much better it was in such short time.
Well, and you really can see how his own emotional changes is, like, he thinks everyone's going to be appalled with him or afraid of him. And everyone's just really accepting. Like, they understand that he has issues, but they all those characters have something, you
like,
know?
Yeah, even, like, Bruce gets it, and then Hulk gets it, too. Like, I love when Captain America's, like, telling everybody what to do, and then at the end of it, he just looks at Hulk and goes, Hulk. And he kind of looks at him like, what? And he's like, smash. Go smash. Have fun. And he just gets this big smile, and he's like, all right, yeah, woohoo.
Well, I think that's, like, what you're saying is, like, how you don't want a movie that's just dedicated to the Hulk. And I could see them maybe pulling it off, but what I think they really figured out as far as how to do a good Hulk character is that he's an accessory. What doesn't work about the first two Hulk movies is that when they turn into the Hulk, when the green guy is there, he's too present. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause when I, like, at least during the Incredible Hulk, when I see the green Hulk running around, I'm seeing
Edward Norton,
like, who's in there mentally, but at least from my knowledge of the comics and everything, that he loses a lot of himself when he becomes the monster, right? I mean, he becomes sort of this uncontrollable.
He's a complete different person.
Yeah, he's a complete, and it's like,
well, they go as far as in this movie, they say the other guy.
Yeah, the other guy.
They make it really clear, like, it's not me, it's another guy.
Yeah, but in like Ang Lee's Hulk, he's like staring at Jennifer Connelly lovingly, like as the monster, and then you know Edward Norton, he's kind of like emo and like you know what I mean. But like this is the first movie where the Hulk is not Bruce Banner. And the fact that he's being utilized in a way as an animal, like, I mean, I know, Josh, you said, too, that you really loved the way they characterized the Hulk and that he's more base. He's working off of instinct. Like, he's the way they animate him.
And he
is
looked
like,
fuck ugly, which I love.
Yeah, like he looked ugly and and his movements was the very first time I've ever seen where they made him like an animal. You said he had the gorilla movements.
And there was no choreography. It was just like, it was almost like if you mixed a monkey and like a toddler and just had them and like somehow married the two like movement types.
Yeah. And directed all of that energy in a productive way. Whereas like in the other movie, he's picking up pieces of shrapnel and using it as shit. Like it was all too choreographed. For me, if you went to go and try and do another Hulk movie, it's going to be weird because you need a Captain America to tell him what to do.
Well, it definitely takes so much of the pressure off that this is an ensemble team movie and you can just like go to Hulk for some awesome shit for like a few seconds or a minute. And then, but you don't have this pressure of his like the primary focus the whole time. Because that to me is one of the strengths of the movie is it's constantly entertaining because you keep going from one group to one group to one group. There's that amazing ass shot where like, literally just the camera goes and we just follow and we're seeing every Avenger doing their thing and running around. It's so hard to be bored when like so much awesome stuff's going on. It's just so fucking entertaining. It's like one of the most entertaining movies I've ever seen.
Well, I'm also wondering too about like, I've never seen it actually myself, but the how popular and like it became a cult thing was like the Hulk TV show. I don't know how much of that is like Bruce Banner and how much of it is him just in green makeup running around kicking stuff.
Mostly Bruce Banner. Mostly Bruce Banner. And then like the second half of the third act of the show, it's Hulk.
No. Okay, so like, but I know
he's running around like the fugitive, like helping people and stuff, right? And then he just happens to go, oh no, and like become the Hulk.
I see. Yeah. I'm just wondering about how they balance that as far as like what we're talking about. Like, how do we do a movie that's just about Hulk and his emotions? You know what I mean? Because it was a popular TV show.
Well, the TV show was almost more about the new character every week. It was
a monster of the week type thing.
He's traveling around. He finds a circumstance. He learns about the people there. He learns what's wrong. And then what's wrong gets to him, turns into the Hulk and fixes it, moves on.
It's a very A-team kind of situation. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
And I think that's how you would handle a Hulk movie, is you put him on an elite squad of fucking mercenaries or whatever, hitmen, and he's the brains, and then occasionally something goes wrong and he's the Hulk. Or they need him to be the Hulk, and not necessarily a movie about him alone on the run, which for some reason they keep putting him alone, and then there's just no room for anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, but I think by the end of the Avengers, we get the sense that he's going to be working for Tony Stark.
Yeah, he's connected capacity. Now.
Yeah, he's in shield. I mean, they're all connected.
I love how they bond in the movie, too. They have this really cool, like, oh, you like science? Yeah, I like science, too. And they, like, get really buddy-buddy and chummy and are
so many memes. Like, I don't know if any of you guys are Tumblr users at all, but Tumblr is, like, the place to go for animated GIFs, basically. And, like, catchy captions on screen grabs of things, and like the amount of energy dedicated to those two guys like broing out and just like clearly the world appreciated the friendship that they gave those two people who in the other movies don't have friends.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's interesting. Tony Stark is not a friendly guy. He's not likable.
Definitely.
He had Terrence Howard a little bit, but he was still there using each other. And now you have two guys who are outcast for so many reasons, foremost because they're exceptional human beings, like intelligence wise, and they get to actually have someone who's on their same level.
Yeah, you know why it works so well, I think? It's because Hulk is so used to everybody just treating like being so scared or being like so delicate with him. And Iron Man's just like, I'm gonna fuck with you.
Yeah, he zapped him with that poker and like stared at him.
And not maliciously, it's just like, get over it, man. It's
well,
because cool.
he's so self centered that, he has the balls to just like poke at this guy and give him shit.
Yeah, because he's truly not afraid of the Hulk, and like he's the only one. Like, even S.H.I.E.L.D. as an organization is clearly like shitting their pants at the thought
because they
of
have
having
a cage
him,
dedicated to him
anywhere near them. But like Tony Stark is just like, no, I'm still the baddest ass like human being alive. Like, what the fuck do I care about this nerd?
Oh, man. And Tony Stark like Mystery Science Theatering the entire film and just like giving everyone shit every step
break.
Of the way.
Yeah, Point Break.
What's he saying with Thor? He's like Shakespeare in the park and like giving him crap.
Yeah,
and
reindeer games.
Yeah, call him Loki reindeer. Like,
and he calls
a
Hawkeye
so
when he's going to put a Hawkeye up in the building. He's like, clench up, Legolas. And like, he's going to crap him.
And this man over here was playing Galaga. Oh. He didn't think we noticed, but we did. And then he actually was like
I love that they actually show him like looking around and loading it back up before the scene's over.
Yeah, like, the whole aircraft carrier thing was just really interesting.
Like, that's kind of the weak part of the movie for me.
I don't know. I didn't really understand it. Like, I think that
the big floating fortress.
It's just the comics. It's just
it's a comic
it's
thing.
It's never nowhere near practical, but it's just them going like, yeah, we'll bring it in because it's the comics, and if you don't like it, it's not going to be in there for the whole movie.
I let it slide just because I really liked all the action set pieces of Iron Man and Captain America trying to like fix the engines and run around.
Captain
like,
America using his super secret power of jumping back and forth.
Well, I think you said when we started talking about the Avengers that you had a couple things you wanted to nitpick. And for me, the main things that come out of it do have to do with the Air Fortress and the set piece that comes out of it. Like, it's gorgeous and it's fun, and I'll look past it for the rest of my life because it was a fun movie. But like, nothing about that makes sense to me. And the whole idea that like Hawkeye is a genius with a bow and arrow and can take out an engine with one arrow like instantly. Just use four arrows and all four engines are out and it doesn't matter. And this whole sequence doesn't even make sense. Like, why is he sneaking around the interiors of the aircraft? Just deal with it, man. You obviously have the talent. Like, So it, I don't know. There was a thing I was surprised with Whedon in that, actually. He seems a little more like that he thinks things through better than that. But I mean, that's like literally the only main thing I have wrong with this movie.
I came out of it immediately like, this doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, it's really frustrating when they take an entire hour of a movie and dedicate it to something that he literally knocked out with an arrow, and then a second arrow that he, for some reason, climbed through the entire ship, like you said, to fire when he could have just fired it at the second engine, whatever. I do kind of appreciate now that it makes S.H.I.E.L.D. look kind of stupid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like Mark Ruffalo, when he's on the ship, he's like, oh, you know, it's, this is the stupidest idea. Like, what could be dumber than this? And it's like, oh, this is even dumber than a submarine. Like, let's go into the sky with the giant green monster man.
And this is somewhat apologetic, but you could also sort of make a case for like Loki's. This is such a mischievous, scheming, like little shit. That if I don't necessarily think his goal is just to blow them up and kill them in 5 seconds. He seems to be the kind of guy that really likes to relish in his victory.
It's
I feel
just
like
because he's not watching. He's not like, what is he relishing in?
Well, he could relish in the attack of the city even by, after they took down the aircraft intelligently.
Yeah, there's so many things that he could have been more a part of rather than like sitting in a box talking to Thor.
Well, it's also like you don't want to take it out too quick because he's on the ship. Like, well, I mean, you're not going to just blow it up sky high.
His, like, his plan wasn't only to take out the ship. Like, that wasn't like the whole point of him being captured, which was part of his plan, was to be captured.
Yeah.
And the attack that, like, he was actually in the safest place that he could be, because if things are blowing up around him, he's going to be perfectly fine. But his plan was to break up the group.
Yeah.
Like, to try to cause them to be in such conflict with each other and disorganized that they have no choice but to go their separate ways. And that's what happens after that thing goes down. Thor is trapped in a thing, he falls. The Hulk is on a plane, he falls. Iron Man and Captain America are disillusioned by Agent Coulson's death. Hawkeye is obviously, and Black Widow are
a little
doing
distraught.
Their, yeah, so like there's a lot going on in that, and I don't think like that was Loki's plan. I don't think like Loki was there to relish and to do that. I think part of the plan was to break up the Avengers, and that's why he needed to be there.
It still doesn't make a ton of sense.
The plan was to have an awesome fight in the sky. That was the plan.
Which is why I said I'll forgive it for the rest of my day. It just doesn't add up.
And so will I. And it makes just about as much sense as the alien sending like 2 or 3 aliens just to start, and then 2 or 3 more, and then 2 or 3 more. Like, none of it.
It's called waves, Alexa. You attack in waves.
Yeah, when you're trying for complete fucking universe domination, I'm pretty sure you throw all you got at it. But, like, I'm okay. Like, it's a cartoon, you know? Like, it is a silly beat-em-up action movie. And, like, as far as set pieces go, it was a cool, like, ship, I guess.
Yeah,
like, even if it is completely nonsensical.
How did you guys
plotless.
Feel about the Chitauri in general? Because
who
I...
Who cares?
Yeah,
the,
they
the
were...
What?
Yeah, like, I didn't...
Well, to me, it's Loki made it all okay. Yeah. Like, if it was just them, it would have been terrible. I can't state enough how much I liked Loki as the villain.
Yeah, yeah.
That actor, Tom Hiddleston, was fucking great.
Yeah.
And he grins and chews scenery
totally.
And just is awesome.
To me, like, he's the villain. Those guys are just his pawns in his, like, game of, you know, whatever.
Part of what was going on a lot to me with the attack, and especially why they were attacking with such few numbers, is, one, Loki's ego... overwhelms him, in that, you know, he thinks humans are weak and worthless, and he convinced the Chitauri of that. That, you know, it's not going to take much to take these people down.
Right.
They
totally underestimates
them. Yeah, they have a couple of guys. It's not going to be a problem, and that's even echoed in the end when like the Chitauri is like, you know, we thought the humans were going to be like really easy, and they're pretty powerful. So I think a lot of that, as far as like, one, why they were attacking with fewer numbers, but part of what makes Loki also a great villain is that this is all being driven by his ego. He thinks that all this is going to be easy because he thinks that he is so smart and so clever and humans are so worthless, and this is all coming back around to prove him wrong.
Yeah.
For space conquesting aliens, they could have done a little better research to that whole nuclear weapon. It just like, and again, all nitpicks, like, I truly enjoyed this movie. I just think that the action sequences are just so big and huge and completely meaningless. Like, that is a downer for me, because it's just like, why are we fighting on this ship again? Like, I kind of forgot halfway through. And then, like, what are the aliens' plan again? Like, to destroy the planet? Like, what are we? I forgot.
I also wondered a little too about how the very beginning of the movie is Loki using his staff to mind control two of our main characters.
Why the fuck not?
Well, no, that's
he is a poor strategist in not using that,
every single second of the movie. He should be mind controlling.
It's true.
And then
it is funny when he shows up with Iron Man.
It is funny. That was funny, but I feel like you could maybe just have touched him on the shoulder and not directly on the arc every time.
I thought he needed the heart. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. There you go. But also, the whole way they got out of that, of the bonk on the head solution, I'm like, okay, I'll give it to you, Whedon.
Well, I could be wrong, but didn't they say, like, the further you are away from Loki's presence, it's sort of the less it has an effect on you?
But they were right next to him.
I'm just saying, like, again, like, I know you want to defend the movie, and I love this movie, and I'll give it to Whedon. It's not perfect, but he did a fantastic job. But I'm just saying, like, the bonk on the head routine, it's like, it's a cop out.
Well, like, I think that, like, the plotting of it is a fail, but the characters within that plot are just all so strong and so good. Like, I can ignore the fact that the movie doesn't really make any sense, and no sequence in the movie really makes any sense. And I don't think the action is as good as it could have been, and I don't think the costumes are all that great. There's so many aspects of the movie that seem like just good enough that the dialogue and the characters and the way they play together just takes it up so far above all of those other movies.
It's
that
so funny.
Don't have it. Yeah, it's super funny.
And there's got to give credit to somebody who can make me tolerate Scarlett Johansson.
Did you guys worry about the first action sequence because it was, like, kind of super flat and weird?
A little bit.
Are
you talking about when, at the very beginning?
Yeah, the, like, how they jump straight into the super cheesy Hollywood music over it. Like, the score, I thought, was pretty terrible.
I liked the beginning. I didn't have a problem
like,
with
just
it.
Out of nowhere, it's, like, super Hollywood action sequence, and they're, like, driving a car out, and you're just like, what is this movie gonna be like? There, it's a car chase.
I think that's okay.
An exciting incident.
Yeah, I think because I like Loki so much that to me the really scene really played is like, oh, here comes Loki. Oh, here we fucking go. And I didn't know that he was gonna mind control people. That kind of blew my mind.
No,
when,
that
like,
was like interesting.
I was like, whoa.
Yeah, but
this
then
is,
it's just like
getting crazy.
I think it might have been the score didn't work for me to a point where a lot of the action just felt like you were immediately being told like this shit's crazy, and you're like, well, it's not that crazy yet. They're kind of just in a pickup truck. But
I don't know if anybody noticed this. It may have just been a personal moment for me, but I really connected with the score in the scene where Agent Coulson comes to Tony Stark's apartment. I don't know if anybody else remembers that music.
I don't remember.
But
I was looking at what's her name and have weird jean shorts. And
her,
super not con and super creepy.
But there's like that's the only element of this score that I actually really, really connected to. And if you go back and see it, I'd be interested to see what you think about it. But
well, I like the theme, the assembling team theme.
A couple of my friends have asked me what I thought about the score because not that I'm a score aficionado, but 90% of the CDs that I own are movie soundtracks, and so they know how I feel about them. And while I didn't think I did like the theme, John, as you said, I think I didn't really notice the score. I don't know. I may have been tired because, you know, we did one of the midnight show and a long day. But to me, part of what makes the score partially effective is that it doesn't call attention to itself. If it can, like Alexi, you said it really did. And so I need to see the movie again is what I really need to do. But I felt like that during the movie, like the music maybe must have been seamless with the action or the scenes and or really appropriate for me to just accept what was going on audiovisually. And not really think about it. There was no like iconic Superman or, you know, even the Danny Elfman's Batman or Spider-Man themes. Like those weren't present to me in the movie. Like I didn't walk away from the movie humming the song.
Right.
Like I didn't hum like Raiders of the Lost Ark or something like that. But when the closing credits came up, I was really engaged with the music of the closing credits. I was like, oh yeah, this is a great music to go with this ending of this action movie. So that's how I felt.
I didn't really bump on anything music wise. So.
I actually did have to give credit to the movie for sound mixing and design though. Like, do you know how many fucking sound effects are in that movie for?
There's
like,
a lot,
characters?
But I heard some fucking pod racers in that Aliens game. I promise you, I heard some pod racers going around and I'm like, again, with
there's
that.
Only so many sound effects to go around.
It's true. Now. And spaceships, you know, are abstract sounds of aliens and whatnot. But as far as the score, like, I just thought it was generic and at some point
it was
loud.
Sylvester.
Yeah, and it felt like a score to Avengers: The Ride, not necessarily to anything else.
I'm remembering this scene with Loki that I really enjoy, where he comes out of like the opera house and he's making everyone like literally get on the floor and bow down to him and stuff.
There are always men like you.
Oh yeah. And also, there's another part where Thor talks to Loki and he's like, do you really think yourself best to like rule mankind? Or do you think yourself better than them? And he just looks at him. He's like, yeah. Yes, I do.
Fuck yeah, dude, I got this fucking helmet. It's rad.
That was such a great line. It's just like, yep. Yes, I do, Thor. Like, I don't know. It's just so clever the way it's written.
I really liked when Thor was like winding up his hammer to wail on Captain America, and like when it hits the no vibration shield and just how all that energy just bounces back. I'm like, oh yeah. And they're all, are we done here? And like Loki's just sitting up there going, ah, these guys. they're just working
and
out some stuff.
He's literally sitting down at that point.
Yeah. Just watching the show.
That Iron Man and Thor fight was really entertaining. And
yeah,
it's fun. I wouldn't have thought that they would be a good matchup, but they did a really good job of just making
Thor headbutts Iron Man or whatever. And
yeah, they just did it. Like, it was a good job of like technology. It was cool to see like technology versus like mysticism and have them just kind of go toe to toe.
And I don't know how much of this is just me being a fanboy because I just really like Captain America as a character, but in this movie, I really liked Captain America way more than the Captain America movie. They gave him so many cool moments. That his whole just stepping up and I love that they actually had him sort of become the leader. Because I was in the back of my mind, I was like, well, okay, they'll just make Iron Man like the leader, and he'll just be one of like a backup guy. But no, he like steps up. He's barking orders. There's that amazing scene where he gives all these orders, and this guy's like, "Who the fuck are you? Why should I listen to you?" Yeah. And then he turns around and kicks some ass, and the guy's like, "Okay, you guys, you go there." And you can, like,
well, he is the one with military experience. Obviously, Thor is a warrior. But, you know, Captain America has experience with leading a team. And
I just was so excited to see Captain America in the Captain America suit.
Yeah.
And it looked badass.
I didn't like it. I did not
I
like
loved
it.
I liked it.
The hood needs to...
Yeah, the helmet.
Everything else was really weird.
Yeah, the hood and helmet were a little awkward. But, man, when the cowl was down and he was just blonde hair, like, you know, like, I don't know. It was everything I always wanted to see.
Did his blonde hair give you chills, man?
Yes, it did. I was lost in his baby blues. Like, no, it was because I liked the military uniform. I know why everybody reacted strongly to his costume in the previous movie, because we're all on this trend of, oh, it looks realistic and it's like the Batman universe stuff. And I get why that's appealing. But I like comic books because they're comic books.
Yeah.
And like, to see Captain America in the red, white, and blue, and have it be so traditional, like Coulson said, sometimes you just need that, right? And people may need that. It just really appealed to the sensibility of why we like comics in the first place. It was the same thing that happened in the X-Men movies. What? Like, what do you expect me to be in yellow leotard? Fuck yes! I expect you to be in a yellow leotard. That's why I read the comics.
I also love that Agent Coulson was like a fanboy of Captain
America.
Yeah, that was really
cool.
Amazing.
He's
been like cool and calm and collected this whole time. Yeah. And then like he just kind of goes, God, in the last movie.
And then the way Joss Whedon has this whole bit about his collector cards, and it's such a dumb joke. And then later Nick Fury's like dropping them on the table and they're covered in blood. And it's just... That's so clever. And then there's that really cool bit where she's like, you know, he didn't get shot with his cards. And they even go.
Robin says that?
Yeah.
Robin.
Yeah, yes, from How I Met Your Mother. Yeah.
Talk about
Kobe
the
Smulders.
Most wasted part of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what she was doing in there. I mean, she was fine, but.
Yeah, she's fine.
He's the new Agent Coulson, man. I'm telling you. Like, then the next movie, she's going to be the replacement.
Well,
you
know
she
what
better
it
get
is.
A little more interesting.
She's friends with Joss Whedon. That's what it's about. Because What's Her Name on How I Met Your Mother was on Buffy, and there's all these connections and. I remember Allison Hannigan. There you go. And I remember when he was in talks to do Wonder Woman and stuff. I remember when he didn't get it, he joked at the very end. He's like, "It would have been you, Kobe, or whatever."
Yeah, he
like
tweeted, "He's like, sorry, Kobe."
Yeah. So they clearly have a rapport and a friendship. I'm sure that's why
she brought zero.
Yeah,
to
he
the
should
table.
Have given her something to say of fucking worth, because like.
Yeah.
So the second time I saw this, my girlfriend said, "Oh, watch what every line she says, like, and count how many meaningless lines there are." And every time she opens her mouth, it's like the reactor's at a 3.4 level, and it's just like completely fucking awkward and weird. And she never there's no like. She's not in the plot.
Yeah, you don't really root for her.
She exists outside of the movie somehow.
Yeah. It's a total waste of a character, honestly.
I mean, she's just like, it's one of those guys walking around the Starship Enterprise just being like, react to cars at 78. And
yeah,
like,
except
whatever.
She did it like 80 times. Yeah.
And I don't think it hurt the movie, but it would have been nicer to have her actually doing stuff.
Yeah, it was just a weird symptom of there not actually being a plot.
Sure, yeah. She's not like, I mean, I guess she's famous on some level. She's not like a Brad Pitt or somebody that people talk about all the time. Like, I don't know how many people say that knows her name's Kobe Smulders or whatever. But it was like, it was another one of those, like, the common factor for me. It's like, you just stole a part from some person that could have had a chance to be something, and only because, like, your face, your friends with weed. I don't know. It was just like, why are you here? You should not be you right now. It bugged me. Bugged me. Especially considering they gave her nothing to work with.
But she almost got crushed by boulders.
I don't know. Yeah,
she had that black generic jumpsuit on, man.
Yeah, I could take it or leave it. I'm totally neutral about it. It doesn't bother me one way or the other. Shit, you guys got anything else about the Avengers?
I mean,
Stanley, Richard.
Oh yes, Stanley. He only appears in a very minor, like I would assume he's almost playing himself. Because he's like some guy sitting at in a park. And he's all like, superheroes in New York. It's
oh right,
that's not
they're
real.
Like interviewing him. Yeah.
Oh, he's like playing chess and.
And I think just because it's a funny thing, and I'm glad they did it, the whole and very, very end of the credits.
That was so funny.
Yeah, the chicken shawarma place. Like, that's just genius. I mean, like, everybody knows that, like, these are character and people and they eat, even though we never see any of them do that really in any of the movies. But it's like the fact that after all that bullshit, you know, you couldn't even, like, muster up a sentence to each other is so great.
Well, and just how they're all pretty much staying true to their character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Captain America doesn't even have any food. He doesn't want anything to do with it. Like,
it's interesting they did it that way. Because he has a full grown beard now for his next thing, and so like they put a prosthesis over it and then had him like leaning like with his face.
Yeah, he
covering
was hiding his
and
face.
So like part of the reason they had him doing that and like not doing it, I mean it totally speaks to his character, but is that he's just hiding his beard. But
No, it's crazy because apparently they shot that like while they were at the fucking premiere or something, like just crazy, which is awesome because it's like I guess Joss Whedon thought of it after the fact. Because I there was a whole like article about it, and I guess Robert Downey Jr. does a lot of riffing in the movie, and I guess for the bit where they're helping him back up, there was like a million takes with a bunch of different things that he said, and one of them was that like we should go get shawarma around the corner.
I don't know what it is, but I want to try it.
And that was such a funny payoff, because especially with all of these movies having like after a couple of these movies came out, all these Avengers movies, you knew like okay. Stay after the credits and I'll get a little tease to like something. And it's really awesome that they carry that tradition. Like after all these movies of like, sure, we found it. And like, here's the dossier and just tease of the Avengers. You get to the very end of the Avengers and you're sitting there like, what's it going to be? And then they're just fucking like eating dinner and silence. Like couldn't be just more like boring. And it was such a great, like just into it all of like, they did it. Like they got all these guys together and we're done and they did it. And it's awesome.
Well, I think something definitely should mention is the, before that scene, there's another end credits, like a mid-credits scene.
The real villain, yes.
That's one of those I had to turn to Josh and be like, who the fuck is that? Like, I had no idea who that was.
Because they show the Infinity Gauntlet in Thor.
Yeah.
Right. Very briefly.
Yeah, like it's like they pan by it.
It's literally like six frames.
No. So I'm assuming in the Avengers 2 or whatever, like the Infinity Gauntlet will play into that.
I think
or
what happens is, like, because Thor has a Tesseract and it goes back into the, I imagine, that room. And so Thanos is probably going to try and go and get it, and then he'll be like, "What's that over there?" And then that'll be how he finds the Infinity Gauntlet. Yeah.
So you just written Thor and Avengers too.
Should I apply for an IMDb credit?
WGA.
But it definitely was. It was interesting fanboy service because I have to imagine like 80 people out of 100 that see that movie will see Thanos or whatever turn around and smile, and most people will be like, like who's that? But it's cool that they're doing that sort of service to like a super fan that would know.
It's worth noting just to explain. I don't know if I explained it to you, but I feel like I did. When like the other is what he's credited as, like his underling with like the extra fingers and red teeth and stuff is like.
The one that's creeping around.
Yeah, the humans are, you know, are more formidable than we thought to face them or to, you know, engage them is to court death.
And it's like he loves death.
Yeah,
right,
in the Marvel universe, death is personified as like a woman in a like a skeletal, a woman's skeleton in like a black robe, and like Thanos is always like kind of like, I want to marry you. Like, it's kind of weird, but he's just like, he has this thing where he wants to, like, he's courting death. So like, that's why he gets like a big, like, huge, like, smile.
That's my thing.
Right. I mean, it's cool. It was a nice little afterward and stuff. Great. Anything else about the Avengers, guys? We covered it all. We assembled.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah. It's good. I mean, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you've seen it. And even if you've seen it, go see it again. So I'm actually thinking of seeing it again because
I could see
really
it a third
fun.
Time. I really enjoyed it. I just curious how everyone else feels. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one, but I still have to put personally Iron Man
right
one
over.
as the favorite movie of the series, yeah. And an Avengers an insanely close second. But it's like it's
well,
up there,
it's
but Iron Man's still
it's
my
a
favorite.
Really unfair comparison because this movie has so much going into it of like build up, and it's this movie is all payoff to like a 5-year build up. So it's sort of it's almost impossible to compare them because
it's possible.
Well, I think what I mean is just it's like you have a massive invasion and 5 superheroes all teaming up versus like, you know, just one guy and one hero. But I like. Ultimately, I thought about it a really long time, and I'm walking out of this whole thing basically thinking Avengers is the best one by like a landslide. Like, it is the best one with a runner up of Iron Man. Iron Man is a great movie, and I really enjoy that movie.
I'm still really on the fence about Iron Man and Avengers. Like, I really like different aspects about them both. I would say I would probably put Iron Man like. It's so close, like you said, Matthew, insanely close. Because Iron Man was like the first one of the, because so many bad comic book movies, and Iron Man, like, I had no interest in Iron Man because I don't know who he is. It's just like, oh, they're scraping up the bottom of the comic book barrel. You know, they're doing Fantastic Four and Thor. This is just it's just gonna go downhill from here. And I was so taken back by how good Iron Man was, and Avengers. I had so high expectations for, and it passed my expectations.
Yeah.
So I think that in that, Iron Man would be better because I was really surprised and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And Avengers, I just thought, Avengers is going to be awesome. So just period.
Got it.
Avengers first, and then Iron Man Thor tied for second, and then I don't care about the other ones.
Ang Lee's Hulk.
No! Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining me for this marathon. We got to have a big talk. What's our next marathon?
Batman.
Well, obviously Batman is going to happen, but that is in June.
July.
Or excuse me. Yeah, Batman's July, in July.
Yeah. We got another one. Yeah.
So we got a month before Batman.
We had talked about like Hannibal and we had talked about Dirty Harry.
Dirty Harry.
I would like to do the Hannibal one. I've never seen any of these Dirty Harry movies though, so I would totally be down with that.
Yeah. It's all right. So we got Hannibal Lecter movies and we got Dirty Harry movies.
But maybe you out there listening should tell us what you would like us to do next.
That's actually, I like that. That's a good point. So here we go. So listeners, we have for next month, we have the Hannibal Lecter films and we have all of the Dirty Harry films. So if you have a preference on which one you would want us to watch, you can email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com and give us your vote. Or if you'd like, you can visit us on Facebook or Twitter and let us know there. We are at facebook.com/cinemarathon and we're at cinemarathonpod on Twitter, cinemarathonpod. And all of this information can be found on our website, which is cinemarathonpodcast.com. So we look forward to finding out what we'll do next. And guys, thank you for yet another lovely marathon.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah, it was a fun one.
Most solid one in a while.
Cinemarathoncatcast.com. Cinemarathoncatcast.com. If you want to meet my cats.
Excellent. All right, we'll see you guys next time. Thank you.